Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
So tomorrow the Phillies will take on the Fighting Connie Max as they take on the Oakland A's. And Scott Fransky, the voice of the Phillies, joins us. Scott, welcome to a new season, and it sounds like a potentially exciting season. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk with you again, Steve.
Good to talk with you, too. All right. So what does the presence of Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber mean to that lineup, in your opinion?
Quite a bit, potentially. I mean, two very professional hitters, a lefty, a righty, hit for power, get on base. You know, Castellanos is a guy who hit over 300 last year, and Schwarber's average historically has not been anywhere near there, but the on-base percentage is certainly there. So these guys, I mean, they will mean a lot to this offense. I think they're going to take a lot of pressure off guys like JT Realmuto and Reese Hoskins, and just kind of spread that pressure out a little bit more. I mean, Harper obviously is the MVP, and he's, you know, on another plane the way he's, you know, played the last couple years, and certainly the way he's played in spring training. So I think it really balances things out and makes the team obviously, you know, 6-7 deep in their lineup, which is it's gonna be tough for a lot of opposing pitchers.
How much does it help, man? Because Castellanos and Schwarber are not great defensive players. They're outstanding offensive players, but they're not great defensive players. So what does that, because of the presence of the DH, how much does that help Joe Girardi in balancing his defensive lineup because he has that DH spot available?
Well, I mean, it helps. I mean, one of them has to play the outfield most days.
Right, yes.
So I think by and large that's going to go to Schwarber. I think they feel like Schwarber's the better defender out there, which I know a lot of people would be like, what? But that's the way at least a lot of the metrics play out. Now, you know, again, somebody gets a hamstring tweak and they're not moving as well, you know, it's a good way to get them part of the game off and just have them hit four times a night and be the DH. And let the other guy play in the outfield. So I do think the DH is, you know, it's going to end up being a big help. Obviously, it's already helped. If there's no DH, then one of those two guys is not here, because there's no point in making that kind of a commitment financially. So the fact that there's a DH, number one, you get a legitimate DH to fill that role, and two, it gives you a lot of options in terms of, you know, you want to give JT a day at first base, or you want to give him a day not at catcher. You know, he can DH. You want to give Reese Hoskins a day, you can do that. Maybe you want to get Hoskins and Bohm in the lineup on a particular day, so Bohm can play third, or I'm sorry, play first, and Hoskins could play, you know, as the DH or vice versa. So I think it gives him a lot of flexibility.
All right, you did bring up in that answer, you talked about the metrics. So I know in football, when I'm broadcasting football, there are a few things I put in there in preparation. More so in basketball. And, you know, and look, at the level I'm doing baseball here with the spikes, it doesn't really come into play. How much have you transitioned in your career to looking seriously at analytics? And I know only a little bit can make a broadcast, but does it make it more in your broadcast than it used to?
Probably, I would have to say yes. I think baseball, as opposed to the other two sports you mentioned, baseball obviously is such a slow sport, and there's a lot of time to talk about things like that. So I do think there's a little bit more time to discuss it. And it not maybe as much on radio as it is on television, where you could actually have the conversation to explain a particular stat or metric or however you want to describe it to the audience. I don't always have that luxury because you always have to keep up with the pitch, and you can't just let the pictures tell the story. So I've tried to keep it fairly simple, unless unless it's pretty easily explainable, which I I find that not a lot of them are.
I agree.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to sit in the middle of a baseball broadcast and explain how they come to the number of defensive runs saved, right?
Yeah.
So either you just accept that the audience knows it, which a lot of them don't, or at least they accept. I think the thing about it is that, you know, batting average is an analytic, right? Right, but it's one that we've all understood how to compute. Okay, ERA is an analytic, but it's one that we've all understood how to compute because we were raised on it. That's, you know, it's ingrained. So I think, like anything else, it takes time with some of these. But if I have to do a bunch of explaining on the air, then it's probably not right for the broadcast.
Exactly. I feel exactly this. In other words, in basketball, I'll talk about points per possession.
Well, yeah.
Okay, that's like a batting average. Okay, I went down. Did I get points on the possession or not? That's a batting average. And if you have to explain it, now you're wasting everybody's time.
Right.
It's like explaining the joke.
Like war. Wins above replacement. There's multiple versions of it, depending on what website you're using, and it's pretty complicated in terms. Like, I don't have any idea how it's figured out. I just know that more and more people are becoming accustomed to the idea that, you know, this guy's WAR is higher than the other guy, so he must be a better player. Sometimes you lose context when you're just throwing these numbers out there. But again, I think, by and large, our audience comes to find out what the score is.
Yeah, and exactly.
So there's the ultimate analytic.
Yeah.
What's the score? And what inning is
it?
Because I think those are the two things that people really want. Larry complain about the umpires or something like that.
Or war. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Or war. Bill, it's funny because you mentioned that. That's exactly what... Because I do teach a sports broadcasting class here at Penn State to go with what else I do. And that's why I was telling him. I said, look, you can't say inning and score enough.
Right.
Simple as that. You just can't. As for war, if Bryce Harper's out of the lineup, I'm smart enough to know the guy they put in there isn't as good. We're done.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we got that. When it comes to the pitching on this, We'll take this in two parts. How do you like the alignment of the starters to get them out of the gate?
I think, obviously, I think we'd all prefer Zach Wheeler to be 100% ready to fire and could have, you know, made that opening day start. I think he earned it with the way he pitched last year. But short in spring, he dealt with some stuff. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So... We move on to the idea that Aaron Nola will get to do it again, and Nola and Gibson are the two most stretched out, and I think getting some innings out of your starters, whether you're the Phillies or the Mets or the Kansas City Royals with this particular month of April is going to be huge to get some innings out of your starters each night, because I know there's extra arms in the bullpen, but they're going to use all of them to try to protect guys and not, you know, rush anybody into it to where they end up with an injury.
Exactly, which now brings us to the next part. We know that it has been a fight for the front office to try and get arms in the middle to get the Phillies to the end. How do you view the middle, that part? You know, is the potential there that it can be better?
Yes, the potential is there, and as you—that's a key word, obviously—and you know that the potential is there, but whether they do it or not, that remains to be seen. Bullpens are so can be so finicky, and relievers can be year to year sometimes. And, you know, Brad Hand, who was as dependable as they come, as durable as they come, he had a bad year last year, and he got kind of bounced around with some, you know, the trade, and then got released by Toronto. I mean, he was awful with Toronto. And, you know, he's a guy, though, that has a track record that suggests that he can do the job. And now, whether he will or not, I don't know. Has age caught up to him? I don't know. His fastball numbers were better in spring training than I think a lot of people reported last year. And that's a good sign. Will it stay, you know, once he gets, you know, tries to go the, you know, second night of a back-to-back or for the third time in four games or something like that? Will it still be there? Will that zip on his fastball still be there? So, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, I think, is a wild card here. Potential is there. We saw him look lights out, and we saw him look not very good at, you know, in different outings during the spring. So, but to me, he is the, you know, him and, you know, maybe even to an extent a Connor Brogdon are the two guys that are kind of wild cards, because I think Brogdon underperformed a bit last year. I don't know that he was ever fully 100%, but I think he can bring more to the table. I think they feel like he can. And Sir Anthony is a guy who, obviously, coming off of injury, it's, you know, it's kind of a roll of the dice. We're not really sure what we're going to see, but if it's the old Sir Anthony, that's big.
How tough a blow is it for a kid like Mickey Moniak, where he finally had made this opening day roster, to now be out 6 weeks?
It's tough. I mean, you know, for any player, much less a young player, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you just try to, you know, make it happen and move on.
That's about all he can do at this point. Can I ask you about go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that's about all you can do. I mean, it's tough. It's tough news, but, you know, I had this discussion with somebody yesterday. You know, we talk so often about the fourth outfielder, the, you know, backup catcher, and all these guys, you know, in the 20, I guess, on a normal year, 26-man roster, 28 this year. But it's going to be, you know, it's going to be 30. It's going to be 35. It's going to be close to 40 players we see this year. So, and it takes all of them to kind of chip in and do some good things in order to get you where you want to go if you're going to make the playoffs.
Ranger Suarez is somebody that, you know, I guess he's in the rotation, but he can help in a lot of ways. What can he mean over 162? Because he does have some versatility.
Well, I mean, he does have versatility. I think they'll stick. The idea would be he stays in the rotation and you know, makes a start every fifth day, because I think they like him that much. And, you know, that's how he was brought up. That's the way he was groomed, was to be a starter. And I know it's something that he relished the opportunity to go back to that last year. I think that the great thing about Ranger is that there's just that calm demeanor. No moment seems too big for him. No moment seems too fast for him. And that's what I like about him. Can he pitch, you know, make 30 starts to a 1.5 ERA? I think that's probably unlikely. But yeah. I think they feel like they have something in Ranger.
And Phillies fans, treat Nick Castellanos well, even though he bought Ben Simmons' house, okay? All right.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that, actually.
Supposedly he purchased Ben Simmons' home, the one in New Jersey in Morristown.
That's great. Well,
check it out. It's a game note. All right.
Yeah, we'll dig into that one for sure. Yeah.
Scott, I can't wait to hear it all season long. Great work, as always. You're the pro's pro. We appreciate you very much.
Thanks, sir. Good to talk with you again.